put into the server, and a large amount of work happens there, and then the results from your work come back there. The issue here can be that in the event that you have to have a lot of interactions with the user in between accesses to the server or to the database, there could be a lot of network traffic flowing. In addition, sending forms, depending on how the solution works, can also be very expensive in terms of sending those over the network. So this model tends to have a lower amount of flexibility, and as a result, may not provide you the best performance for your environment, although it does tend to be an inexpensive way to get to client server, and it does tend to allow you to leverage some of the investment in applications that you already have if you're using, for example, a terminal emulator, or if you're using B plus for Windows or something like that. Okay, moving on to the second model, this is on page 34. This is the database server model, and we're seeing a lot of tools being developed for this environment. Basically, this environment is characterized by database calls actually going over the network. So if you're using an SQL database, for example, your select and insert and delete statements are actually flowing over the wire in here. And this model has had the potential disadvantage in terms of performance, because of the fact that for every operation that you want to do, from beginning a transaction, updating some data, inserting, you had to send a message over the network. This problem has been mitigated to a large extent by features which have been integrated into relational databases, such as stored procedures, referential integrity, rules, triggers, things like that. And with these features, you really get the best of both worlds. If you look at the earlier model that we talked about it being well-suited to an environment where you wanted to ship a request for information over the network, where then a large amount of work went on in the server in terms of several instructions being executed. With this model on page 34, with the database server model, you now have flexibility. You can, if you need a lot of interactions with the user between database calls, you can go back and forth easily, but if you want to be able to ship transactions or functions over the network, things like stored procedures give you that flexibility. So the combination of tools proliferating in this environment, as well as the flexibilities being added, makes this a really well-suited model for today's environment. Going on to page 35, the distributed application server model. This model gives you a complete flexibility, in a sense, because it allows you to split the application across the client and the server. And this way, you can decide, at what level you wanted work. You can decide what application logic should be residing on the client and what application logic should be residing on the server. There's a couple of issues here. First of all, there aren't many standards in this area, although they are starting to evolve now and come to market. And secondly, there aren't a lot of tools available here. So this model gives you the most flexibility, and in terms of performance and things like that. However, it's not doesn't have necessarily the tools or the standards necessary today that are readily available, well-tuned, although they are starting to come to market here. So this is kind of a future model that that you'll be hearing more about and may want to research a little bit.
Okay, and once again, I think the real reason for this little detour we just did into the role of client-server computing is that if there is a particular computing model, if one of these models we've discussed is one that you've chosen to use for your application development and your environment, it's going to be critical that you find a FortGL that can support that model to the extent that you plan to take advantage of it. So if you have made a commitment to one of these, be sure that's a question you ask and find out what the FortGL vendor is doing in that area. Let's go to the fourth and final area then of our four-step process here, functionality considerations. What kind of functionality should people be looking for in a FortGL, Dave?
Okay. First of all, there's the whole area of data presentation. And here we're talking about, again, generating forms, doing reports, graphs, supporting things like query tools, and doing your windowing environment in the case of that you want to do Windows. And finally, integration with any third-party tools that might be in that environment. So this is the whole area, basically, of creating the interfaces with the user. Moving on to page 37, in terms of programmer productivity, this area didn't necessarily, in the early days of 4GL, wasn't part of the environment. It was mainly the abstract 4GL language that was part of a 4GL. But 4GLs, really, as we discussed earlier, are starting to encompass much more. And here we're talking about things like version controls and data dictionary. And this is especially valuable now in a networked environment where you have tools come on board that give you both client-server capabilities as well as the ability to do version management and data dictionary management across a team sitting on a network. Moving on to page 38, in terms of functionality considerations and performance considerations, and I want to really focus in on this as something that is absolutely critical in a 4GL. Remember earlier we talked about the fact that 4GLs help you with your ease of use and time to market because of the integrated environment that it gives you. But because of the fact that they tend to be open and try to be portable and run on different platforms, there are some things that you need to look at very carefully in terms of the level of integration that it gives you. If you look at the server functionality, for example, you want to have the flexibility to be able to try to exit out and do things other than just do things in your database environment. So you might want to do things that are write messages to files or send messages on the server. And on the client side, you want to be able to make sure to take advantage of different client functionality like Windows or in a Macintosh environment, some of the features that might give you. And if you go with a product that that gives you a lot of openness and flexibility, and on that side, it may not give you as much in terms of access to vendor-specific features that you'd like to take advantage of. In the area of performance, there's two areas here. One is on the network. Again, we talked about how important it was to get a product that is well-tuned for network access as well as host terminal access, because you may have an environment that's mixed in terms of client-server and host terminal access. You also want to look at features in a database like stored sections, stored procedures, and static SQL. These are ways that you can pre-store queries or entire routines inside the database and get more performance out of your system. In a system that is more of a least common denominator approach, sometimes you don't get access to some of those database features that are really needed for high-end transaction processing performance or high-end query performance. In the area of breadth of database functionality, database vendors, as David and George mentioned earlier, are really enhancing the standards or adding value beyond what the standards provide. There's a lot of complex locking modes that are available in databases that aren't standardized. We talked about stored procedures already. There are features like binary large objects to allow you to store voice and media data in databases. There are timeout features so that you can time out on locked requests. And there are many more in a database environment that are, I'm just kind of scratching the surface here. And you want to look at, if it's important to you to have performance and breadth of functionality for your 4GL, you want to look at whether or not the vendor takes advantage of those features. So, you know, in summary, you need to look at these four criteria and look at whether or not you want portability as a key criteria, performance, functionality in terms of database access, et cetera, and kind of trade those off, because most vendors are stronger in some areas and weaker in others.
And I think that's the key, is that if we were really to kind of summarize this 4GL discussion, is that it's critical that you define up front what you're looking for in each of these areas before you go talk to the 4GL vendor. So define up front the strategic importance to your organization of the applications and treat your evaluation of the vendor's business accordingly. Determine up front your requirements for openness, the clients, the servers, the databases you want to support, and then go find the vendors who support that set. No more than that, no point getting more than you need, as Dave talked about. Computing models. If you have a computing model you're particularly attached to or want to implement, determine that up front and then make sure that your vendor can support you on that. And if there are particular functionality, particular performance considerations that are critical to you, make sure those also have been identified and then ask the questions of your vendor. At this point, then, we're going to send you on to the next step, which would be to begin to contact some of the 4GL and data access and tool vendors. And we've listed some of them on page 40, and no doubt you've heard of some of these, you may have experience with some of these, you may have other people or companies that have used some of these tools. And really, we put this on to you to contact them, because it's critical when you're working with the 4GL vendors, when you're evaluating the solution, that you are having them evaluate it for your specific environment. Please go out, ask the tough questions, get very specific answers, get the very technical answers, and make sure that you really have a strong match. The relationship, your partnership you're establishing with the 4GL vendor may be a long-term one, so make sure it's the right one. at this point in the program, we want to kind of go to our final segment. We've been talking in the abstract about portable applications. I want to share with you now an actual case study, an actual customer who is using a 4GL to develop new and portable applications. Our case study is the Communications Technology Center for the State of Washington, which is a centralized information services organization that provides services to the 32 community and technical colleges. And this includes applications like financial management, student management, registration, payroll, things like that. We had a chance to talk to Sue Lester, who is the manager of development at CTC, and hear about her experiences and her team's experiences in moving into the world of 4GL. We'll play back a tape of Sue's comments. We do have her on the line with us today, so if you have any comments along the way, make a note of that, and we'll take them in Q&A, which will begin in just a few minutes. So let's hear Sue's comments now.
Sue, let's start with some background on your project. Now, when you began this effort, what was it that you really set out to try and accomplish?
Okay, our major goal was to improve our administrative applications for our users, with the biggest objective being expanding access to users that typically haven't been able to access the applications because we're limited by the serial connections to the HP 3000. So with networks being installed at all the campuses, there's a lot of demand from other user constituencies to get access to the information.
Now, see, you chose a 4GL as a way of meeting this objective. Why did you do that?
Well, when we originally went to the HP 3000, we chose a 3.5GL then, Protos and Transact, rather than a 3GL. And we chose a 4GL for basically the same reasons. We were looking at productivity issues for our development staff to make them as productive as possible. The other key reasons why we chose a 4GL is because we wanted portability across a lot of different databases and file management systems, operating systems, and graphical user interfaces. And we didn't feel that we could achieve that with our staff in the time frame that we needed to using a 3GL.
Okay. Well, now, Sue, I guess it's been about 12 months now since you selected your tools. And you know, so obviously, you first defined your short and long-term strategies. But I'm curious, from that, once that was complete and you started working with the tools, what have you been able to achieve? What results have you seen so far?
Okay, right after we completed our contract negotiations with Uniface, that was the 4GL we selected last summer, actually. Part of the contract we negotiated with them was to complete a formal evaluation of the tools prior to, you know, the finalizing of the contract, where we would actually be trained, our staff would be trained, and we'd go through and develop using the tools and test the requirements of a request for proposal that we had completed. So we did go through the training, and we developed applications, and we ported them across the HP 3000 MPE using Image and Allbase to HP 9000, HP UX using Allbase, and Microsoft Windows. And we ran the application both client-server and host-based, testing, you know, with terminal emulators and that, to make sure that they met all of our requirements. And they did successfully meet the requirements, and we successfully concluded our contract negotiations. Then we went on to take the work that we had done there and expand it into a demonstration application. You know, we had some budgeting functionality, some menuing for users to select applications, and actually we wrote a context-sensitive help, hypertext-type help application using Uniface. We wanted to use the demonstration application to get over our initial learning curve and learn about the tool and what its capabilities were, and also to be able to demonstrate to our users the kind of features and functionality that they can look forward to in the new applications. We've also completed rather extensive work on standards for the new environment. We're facing a lot of changes here, and we used what we learned in the demonstration application and our knowledge from the past on where we need to set standards to work on building and coding standards, user interface, reporting standards, and standards in other areas like that to help our development activity in the future. We figure the more time we spend up front determining how we're going to do things, this includes even the development process, how that's going to work, that the more productive we'll be in developing the application. We've also spent extensive time in requirements and design and prototyping on what we're calling our foundation applications. That includes a menuing system, online help facility, security, defining what users can run, what applications, and what their authority is in those applications, a messaging system. Basically, we're building components that will be used and shared by all the business function applications that we develop in the future. We're also working on the requirements design and prototyping of our first major production application, which is a budgeting system that will serve not only the budget office at all the colleges, but all the departments. So we're dealing with a lot of issues of electronic approval of business transactions and security issues so people can only see what they're authorized to. We're scheduled to start beta testing at a college in the fall. We'll be adding functionality incrementally and testing the technology and the tools in a live environment over the next year.
Well, now, Sue, I'm curious, what has your staff learned so far in the time they spent working with the tools? What words of wisdom would you have to pass on to someone else who might be embarking on a similar project?
Okay. One of the things we found when we were looking for tools is that because there are so many tools available on the market now, it's really, really important that people have a very clear vision of what their long-term and short-term strategies are and what their objectives are. Because it's really difficult to make a decision when you're faced with so many choices. So you have to have a good understanding of your staff and your users and what your requirements are. It's also really important to keep your user community involved every step of the way because, you know, this upfront process is taking quite a bit of time before actually a delivered application that they can use is going to come out the door. And so keeping them informed of what's going on helps keep their support going and gets them involved and getting their opinions on things that you're doing, like standards that you're setting and in those areas, really important. For us, training is a really, really big issue, and I think anyone facing this should not underestimate what the training requirements are. We're moving from basically, you know, a Protos Transact V plus image environment to relational database. We're going to be using Allbase, SQL, 4GL, and graphical user interface, you know, client server, host base, portability issues. There's a lot of training involved, both in the tools, the technologies, that you really need your staff to be trained, and you need to allow time for that. It's not something you can do on the job training. Another thing we found really helpful is getting some key consulting services to help the staff learn the technologies, learn how to apply the technologies appropriately, and helping, you know, with direction issues, what things you need to be aware of and look at. That was really helpful for us, and I think that'd be really good for people to do to help make sure that it's successful. You know, when I talked about standards before, I think it's really important to convince your management and your user community to give you the time to set the standards, because I think it will help increase your productivity down the road if you have already set standards and guidelines for what the applications are going to look like, how they're going to be done, you know, what steps you're going to go through. User interface standard is very complex when you move to graphical user interface. And even the character mode user interface that we're using with our 4GL has the same kind of functionality, pull-down menus, pop-up windows, all kinds of functionality. You need to figure out how you're going to use that so you can provide that consistency. Our users are real dead set on consistency across applications for training purposes and learning curves. I think the demonstration application we did, which is basically a throwaway application that we have no plans, we never had plans to implement, was really valuable for our staff. It helped them get their hands on the tools and they could play around because they knew it wasn't going to be implemented and learn what the tools have to offer, learn what, you know, where the problems are, where we need to set standards. You know, that was a really valuable thing. Plus, we've been able to use that over the past year to show users what to expect and get them thinking about the future. One big area that we're still wrestling with is implementation issues, version control issues. We're going from an environment where we just had, you know, one version that ran on the HP 3000, and we kept everybody in sync on a very timely basis. But now we're moving to where we're going to have to install software on local area networks as well as the 3000 and keep the versions in sync. The client and the back-end server pieces and the databases all need to be on the same release of the software. And that is a huge, huge issue that we're still wrestling with. I think that everyone that's going into client server really needs to look at that carefully and think about how they're going to do that. We found through our work that actually I think portability of the application is probably the least of our problems. The tools that we've chosen are very portable and basically some back-end processing like, you know, database setup and stuff are going to be issues in portability, but the application itself is extremely portable. And we're facing bigger challenges in managing the scope of our project and our user expectations because we have new tools with new capabilities and they're asking for a lot of stuff that we're not sure, you know, what the impact on response time and performance is going to be. So we're going to implement in a very phased approach, adding functionality in a very controlled manner so we can see, you know, if we're going to hit the wall, what's causing us to hit the wall so we can take a different direction or reconsider some of the things they're asking us to do. Another point is, you know, 4GLs are written to operate in a certain way, and you may have some requirements or some ideas that kind of bend it or make you think you need to use a 3GL. And in some cases, you may actually need to use a 3GL. But you need to really look at what the 4GL has to offer and be careful that you're not bending it, because the more you bend it, the more problems you're going to have in causing yourself more development time and support and maintenance problems in the future. So we're just trying to get people to think differently. It's kind of hard to change to this environment for a lot of people, especially I could see if you're coming from a COBOL-based background, it would be real different ideas. So I think encouraging people to look beyond what they're currently doing is really important, and to not think that everything has to be done the same way it's always been done.
Well, Sue, thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us. I think it's always helpful to hear from someone who's actually been there and done it before and learn from their experiences. So thank you very much.
Well, hopefully Sue's comments were helpful to you, and we will have her on the line with us this morning to answer any questions. We apologize for being a few minutes behind. I guess next time we'll advertise this as How To in 68 minutes. We have a couple more pieces of closing business, and then we're going to turn the program over to all of you for question and answer. First, I'd like to call your attention to the calendar of coming events you'll find on page 47 in your packet. Our next audio conference seminar will be on August 11th. This is going to be a little different from the past programs we've been doing. It's not really focusing on a technical issue, it's more focusing on a business issue. That is this question of how to find a cost-effective way to upgrade your systems. And we'll be specifically talking about programs that are available for Cognos MM2 and owners of some of our older mid-range and high-end hardware, talking about the promotions that are available and sharing some customer experiences who have actually done these upgrades. Our audio conference seminar will then continue in October with a look at systems availability, and then in November with our next video conference. An event you may be interested in on September 15th, Network Management in the 90s. This is an HP education presentation. It's a special seminar for your technical staff about network management. You can call the 800 number noted there for more information or registration. We also hope to see you at Interex at the User Conference and Trade Show in San Francisco, also coming up in September. You'll also find in your folder a schedule for the upcoming regional user group events. We're actively participating in many of these meetings, and a regional user group is a great way to not only hear what's happening with the HP 3000, but also to find out what some of your peers at other organizations also in 3000s are doing and the challenges that they're taking on and how they're addressing their unique issues. So we do encourage you to get involved with your local organization. Contact numbers are listed for you there. Finally, in the program, we want to get your feedback on today's program. We want to know how well we were able to meet our objectives and how useful the program was to you. We're going to do the evaluation using your touch-tone phone. You'll find the questions listed on the last page of your slide packet. So let's just walk through these now, and if you can enter in your feedback as we go along. The first question we want to know is, what was the overall quality of the program? If you found the overall quality of this program to be excellent, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone now. If you found the overall quality to be very good, press star 2, good, star 3, fair, star 4, poor, star 5. Once again, just enter in on your touchtone phone your rating of the overall quality of the program. Star 1 for excellent, star 2 for very good, star 3 good, star 4 fair, star 5 poor. Please go ahead and do that now. Okay, our second evaluation question. This program was worth my time. If you agree strongly with this statement, please press star 1. If you agree, press star 2. No opinion, star 3. Disagree, star 4. Disagree strongly, star 5. Once again, we're interested to find out if the program was worth your time. If you agree strongly that the program was worth your time, press star 1 now. If you agree, press star 2. No opinion, star 3. Disagree, star 4. Disagree strongly, star 5. Please go ahead and do that for us. All right, our third evaluation question. The content of this program was relevant to my job. If you agree strongly with this statement, please press star 1. If you agree, press star 2. No opinion, star 3. Disagree, star 4. Disagree strongly, star 5. Once again, do you agree with the statement the content of this program was relevant to my job? Please input your feedback for us now. Okay, our fourth evaluation question. The information presented in this program will help me more effectively evaluate strategies and tools for developing portable applications for the HP 3000. If you agree strongly with this statement, press star 1. If you agree, star 2. No opinion, star 3. Disagree, star 4. Disagree strongly, star 5. Once again, the information presented in this program will help me more effectively evaluate strategies and tools for developing portable applications for the HP 3000. Please give us your feedback now. And the final question in our evaluation, we want to know if you thought an audio conference was an appropriate way for us to present this information to you. If you thought an audio conference was appropriate, press star 1 now. If you would have preferred a video conference, press star 2. If you would have preferred a videotape, press star 3. If you would have preferred written material, press star 4. If you would prefer an audio tape, press star 5. Once again, what did you think of using audio conference as a way to get this information to you? If you like the audio conference, press star 1. If you would prefer videotape, star 2, or video conference rather, star 2. Videotape, star 3. Written material, star 4. And audio tape, star 5. Okay, well, that's all we need in terms of statistical feedback. You will also, though, find in your information packet a comment card. If you have any specific suggestions, thoughts, ideas, topics for future programs that you'd like us to hear, please just jot those down on that card and drop it in the mailbox for us. We're eager to hear that and eager to see those comments. In particular, if you encountered any difficulties or problems with registering or getting your materials or getting logged on today, let us know that as well. We're still working out some of the technology and implementation issues around these programs, and I need to have your feedback to know how we're doing on that. So please send those cards on in. So at this point in the program, then, I want to thank you all for joining us. Hopefully what you've heard today has been helpful to you. Hopefully you're leaving today better prepared to make this evaluation. And the lessons that you've heard and the ideas that you've heard talked about today will help you in the future. We're going to turn the program over to you for question and answer. First of all, I want to introduce you to two additional people we have with us for Q&A. First of all, we have Mike Yon. Mike is with the MPE lab here at CSY in Cupertino. He's a technical consultant there, and he'll be here providing answers to some of the more technical questions that may come up. And do we have Sue Lester on the line with us?
Yes.
Great. Thank you, Sue. Good morning, and thanks for being with us. Okay, if you do have a question, what you should do is press star 1 on your touchtone phone. That will log the question with the conference center. So just press star 1 now if you have questions. And while you're punching those in, I'm going to throw a question out to Dave. Dave, we've talked about this idea of 3GLs or 4GLs, and I'm curious, in some cases there may be applications where a 3GL is the best solution, in some cases there may be applications where a 4GL is the best solution, all in a single computing environment. Is a coexistence strategy possible? Can I use both?
Yeah, in fact, it's absolutely true that we find our customers across the whole spectrum, on the one hand, doing everything in a 3GL environment or everything, including your mission-critical work in a 4GL environment. However, most of our customers find there are particular things that are well suited to one or the other. And so there are definitely capabilities and hooks in the systems to allow you to use both environments as you see a good fit.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I particularly see a lot of customers today using fourth generation languages in conjunction with legacy applications that were written maybe a long time ago using a 3GL, typical COBOL, V+, and Turbo Image application. With today's 4GLs, there's no reason in the world why that the kernel application of your environment, if you will, the legacy application, can then be extended so that new functionality can be added to the existing application without touching the COBOL code. You just add the additional functionality in a 4GL. And that has implications, incidentally, for the way you select your 4GL, because you want to make certain that 4GL is capable to access all of the different data formats that your legacy application might use. So, for example, can the 4GL get to the data that's in TurboImage? Can it get to the data that's in perhaps KSAM files or FLAT files or in other formats? So that's something that you want to consider as you select your 4GL.
Another way that, that's a very good point, another way that these tools can be used together, if you want to write not only coexisting in terms of legacy and current, but if you want a new application to use both technologies, 4GLs typically have hooks that you can exit to a third-generation language environment on the client side, for example, if you're doing client-server work. If you want to get out to the server, some of the server code, either in the database or in the case of a 4GL that might have some server code running there, you can also exit out on the server to do things like printing or writing to a file. So there's also that flexibility that's evolving.
Okay, great. Okay, Danita, do we have any questions this morning?
Yes, sir. We do have some questions. We'll take our first question from registration number 1329.
Okay, please go ahead with your question.
You were, George, you were talking about standards in programming and databases and networks. Can you talk a little bit about emerging standards and objects, particularly with some of the work the Object Management Group is doing, and where that would fit into the whole scene?
Well, you're a little ahead of me there. We hadn't really prepared to talk about that emerging technology insofar as the 3000 is concerned. Objects, of course, are probably one of the most interesting areas today, but I'm not really prepared to talk much about Dave.
There's a couple of things that are happening there. In the SQL area, the current state of the standards for the ANSI standard is that ANSI 89 plus something called the addendum is the existing standard that most of the vendors support. There's a new standard, the SQL 92 standard, which is also called SQL2, which is currently in the state of being wrapped up. And there's three parts to SQL2. There's level 1, 2, and 3. For full SQL2 or SQL 92 compliance, these are things like stored procedures that are being standardized, et cetera. SQL2 level 1 is where people are currently doing work. Now, there's a complete new standard that's being evolved called SQL3, which is the new object-oriented SQL standard. And there's a lot of object-oriented features that are being looked at there in terms of things like encapsulation, inheritance, active databases, and things like that. That's a very young, immature standard that's really on the drawing boards right now and is going to go through a lot of changes there. So that's one of the object-oriented standards. There's also something called CORBA, the Common Object Request Broker environment. That's more for object-oriented applications sharing information. That's another evolving thing. So there's a lot of things going on in the object management group in this area, and I think the overall area of object standards is still fairly young and evolving. SQL3 is probably one of the standards that's a little bit further along, but even that one is really much, very much on the drawing board. Mike, do you have anything to add, or George?
I think that covers probably most of the things, and of course, in the languages area, I think C++ is probably the language we're seeing used most, and I don't think we're prepared to make any announcements in that area. I know it's been an ongoing investigation area for the HP 3000 to offer the C++ language.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's probably highest on the list of things that we're looking at CSY, but as I say, I don't think I'm authorized to make any announcements in that area.
Yeah, we have heard a lot of requests for C++, and we're certainly looking into that in terms of making that available. One of the interesting things in talking about 4GLs in this area is that we're seeing a lot of tools, 4GL tools coming out that are supporting 4GL the object-oriented programming languages. Think of Smalltalk environments, for example. There's some new smaller companies that are adopting Smalltalk-based methodologies, which are much more object-oriented as well. So we're seeing a lot of proliferation there. And we're doing work, for example, to try to marry some of those tools to our OpenODB database, which is object-oriented. Although today it doesn't conform with the standard, what we're looking at is taking some of the SQL3 functionality and putting that on top of the OpenODB object database, since there's a natural kind of fit there for that. So I guess the bottom line here is there's a lot of work going on in terms of the standards and in terms of marrying proprietary approaches like Smalltalk tools and OpenODB to those standards, but it's still very much in its youth right now.
So out of all that, did you find the answers you were looking for?
Well, I guess what I was trying to see is where those object standards might fit in relation to some of the programming standards and the API standards for POSIX, that sort of thing. And what it sounds like is that standards are materializing, but it's not clear yet exactly where they will fit in and when they'll be something that we can design towards.
I think that's an accurate perception. In terms of when they'll be materializing, I would look for that to evolve over the course of the next few years.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much. Okay.
There's definite,
your question.
There's a definite, if you look at things like ODBC today and ANSI standards and POSIX, I think it's fair to say that they're much further along than the object standards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for calling in. Thank you for your question. Once again, if you have a question in the program today, you can just press *1 on your touchtone phone, and that'll register the question with our conference center. Dina, do we have any other questions?
Yes, sir, we do. We'll take our next question from registration number 1457.
Okay, please go ahead with your question.
Yes, my question is for, I think, Sue Lester. I was curious as to why she selected the Uniface 4GL product over what seems to be 4GL products that have been out on the market longer and seem to be more of a market standard.
Sue, I'm not sure if you could hear the question there, but we're interested to know why it was you chose Uniface, which is a relatively new product, rather than some of the other products that have been out a little bit longer. Can you comment on that for us?
Sure. We went through probably about a year and a half of talking to all the vendors that are on HP, available on HP. We actually, through our evaluation, we never talked to Uniface. We put a request for proposal on the street in January of 92. And we had heard the name from HP, the name Uniface, in a person, so we sent them a copy. As it turned out, they met our requirements better than any other vendor. And they are further along in supporting client server and being more portable than the other vendors we talked to. And just like we had some very complex requirements, we needed to support terminals and multiple graphical user interfaces, multiple databases, and multiple operating systems, and they just were absolutely the best product on the market.
Okay, does that give you some insight into what Sue was thinking?
Yes, it does. I guess, we're a powerhouse shop here, so obviously, my question was, I guess you're saying that this particular product rated higher than powerhouse as far as this particular project was, which is sort of surprising to us.
Sue, was powerhouse one of the products you evaluated?
Yes.
Okay.
And Uniface scored much, much better in the technical areas than powerhouse did. Much more robust product and better met our needs.
Okay. All right. Does that answer your question then?
It does.
Okay. Thank you for calling in. Okay, Danita, our next question, please.
All right. Our next question comes from registration number 1218.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Please go ahead with your question.
The question relates back to portability. If you're in the process of building applications within a Unix environment like HP UX, and you're a mixed application set of 4GL and 3GL, primarily C, and coming back to the POSIX environment onto 3000, could you get a little bit more specific? And I don't care who handles the question, either George or the other gentleman. Can you get a little bit more specific on some of the concerns I need to address as far as coming from a Unix environment to a POSIX environment?
Well, one of the things, this is George, and let me try to address the question first, and I'll try to take it from the 3GL side, and perhaps Dave wants to talk a little about the 4GL side. On the 3GL side, once again, one of the things that we talked about was that on HP UX, of course, the operating system interfaces that are available there include much more than just the POSIX interfaces. And so if your application programmers working on the Unix platform have been working on your applications, you know, with that in mind, where they've been aware of what's standard and what isn't, and simply addressing the POSIX environment and trying to avoid all of the others, then you should be in pretty good shape from that perspective for moving the C programs back across to the 3000. Now, one of the things that you will still need to be aware of, however, is as of release 4.5. CSY has not implemented 100% of even the POSIX.1 standard on the 3000. For example, some of the general terminal interface functionality is not there as of release 4.5. What we've discovered, interestingly enough, is that very few applications today are actually using the general terminal interface functionality, even on HP UX, directly. If they're using it at all, they're using it indirectly through things such as the Cursus library. So what we've chosen to do on release 4.5 on MPE is to implement the Cursus library without the underlying general terminal interface. In other words, our version of the Cursus library is built literally on top of the MPE intrinsic interface. So, but to the application that uses the Cursus library, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference. So from a 3GL point of view, I think one of the things that you want to be aware of in terms of portability is what standards, what have your application programmers been doing on HP UX, and what have they not been doing? Just to tell you a little war story to back that up, one of the interesting things that I've learned in the last couple of years is as we've ported more and more code to the 3000 from Unix platforms, interestingly enough, the folks that have had the most trouble in doing that have been the old-time Unix shops that have had applications that have been running on Unix for many years, because typically they grew up on some particular implementation of Unix, whether it was Sun or somebody else's. And they took full advantage of all the features that were available on that Unix platform because they bought into the idea that Unix is the standard and therefore all Unixes ought to be the same. The folks that have had the least amount of trouble importing to the 3000, oddly enough, are the relative newcomers, people who perhaps were coming from another proprietary platform, such as the IBM mainframe platform, and were porting to Unix with their eyes wide open, fully aware that the particular implementation of Unix that they were porting to is certainly not going to be the only one that they're interested in. So they've been very savvy about what's standard and what represents an extension on their Unix platform. When you do that, then moving off of the Unix platform to another proprietary open standard platform, such as MPE represents today, gets to be a whole lot easier. And incidentally, one of the things that is available for moving from HP UX to MPE that you want to be aware of is there is a porting guide, the porting evaluation kit, which includes software that runs on an HP 9000 workstation that will evaluate your C source code to determine where the calls are that are not implemented on the 3000. So that's something you certainly want to be aware of if you're moving code across. Now, from the Uniface side of the fence, let me kick that over to Dave and see what he has to say.
Well, I guess I can answer the question generally from a 4GL perspective, and then if you have any more questions specific to your environment, I'd be happy to address that. But basically, as we talked about with a 4GL environment, one of the big benefits you get moving there is that because of the fact that the tool vendor takes the responsibility of providing the portability across both the operating system platform as well as the database platform that you're running on. Now, hypothetically, it should be very straightforward there. It puts the burden on the 4GL vendor to provide that support for portability as opposed to needing to do it yourself. And you should be relatively shielded from the differences in the database and in the hardware and in the operating system as you make that move. Now, having said that, of course, different vendors do a better job of that than others. And depending on your environment, depending on whether or not the vendors you're using support the environments that you're using on the different systems, that's a very site-specific issue. So do you have any further specific questions or follow-up either for George or myself on that, or does that answer the question?
No, you've answered the question, but I got just one on the porting evaluation kit, George.
Yeah.
Just get that through your sales representative.
Well, I know who to get it from here in the division. Mike is shaking his head that, yeah, if you go to your sales rep, he should be able to get a copy of it back to you.
Yeah, and one of the documents that's included there, I believe it's included there, it may be in the developer's kit, but there is a Unix to MPEIX cross-reference guide, which is a very handy document that goes through just about all of the Unix calls that you're likely to run across, because if you're not a POSIX compliant shop, and a lot of the older shops, you know, as George was saying, wrote code long before that standard ever came into being, it has a listing of all the Unix calls and where they originated. Is this an AT&T System 5 call? Is it a Berkeley call? Is it a POSIX standard call? And it tells you what to do about that call on an MPE system, because in addition to implementing the POSIX calls, we have implemented some of the AT&T System 5 calls just because we ran into them frequently. And if it's one that we haven't implemented, we'll point you toward what the equivalent MPE call is that you should probably use as a workaround. So that's probably a document you want to have sitting by your side, along with some sort of POSIX.1 documentation. We typically point people to the POSIX.1 Programmer's Guide by Fred Zlotnick as a resource to help people understand exactly what functionality is covered by the POSIX.1 standard.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your question. All right, our next question then, please.
All right, sir, that is all the questions at this time.
Okay. If anyone else does have a question, if you'll quickly press *1 on your touchtone phone, we'll stand by to answer that. And if there are no more questions, then we will conclude the program.